Inoho, please be seated.
So, Mr. Reid, have you finished your questions? Mr. Moore, did you have any questions, bearing in mind that your initial questions were of a general nature to cue the court and parties in?
No, thank you, Your Honour.
Right. Okay, so the court's questions. This doesn't indicate any outcome in relation to any party's relief. Got some questions to be answered in relation to the JWS, just trying to clarify things that have been said, totally random, they're just scattered throughout. And then some questions about the policies, you know, the objective policies and rules. So, in the first of those questions, this is on the text of the JWS, paragraph 31, and here is a paragraph, I think, concerning deemed permits, but some folk haven't replied for a replacement yet. I'm just wondering why we've been told this. Yeah. Mr. De Palsmaker, I'm going to ask you.
Sorry, Your Honour, I've just got to
read.
Your Honour, paragraph 31 provides some extra context or data to support statement in paragraph 30, the third line, where the witnesses state that the vast majority of the permit replacement applications have been lodged with proposed stake and volume limits already proposed. So paragraph 31 just basically says how many have not been, how many, I assume it is deemed, water permits. So this is in addition to the number of deemed permits.
Yeah. Sorry, Your Honour. I might be able to assist. It was Mr. De Palsmaker's right, and that 31 was paragraph 31 was seeking to contextualise the risk that was being talked about in paragraph 30. So my memory is that Mr. Leslie provided information on the number of water permits that were still remaining to be reconsented. So that was on the basis of the assumption that the vast majority of deemed permits have already been, a replacement application has already been lodged for the vast majority of deemed permits which are likely to be sought to be replaced. And so the risk of allowing data to be factored into what should be considered on as replacement allocation, we thought potentially remained with water permits that expire after the October 2021 date within the time frame of Plan Change 7. So those numbers were really just trying to contextualise how many permits might expire after the October 2021 date.
Okay, so the risk here is the risk for manipulation of maximum take-all volumes?
That's right. So I think it was in relation, I'll just check back, it was in relation to the removal of the end date that had been in there in terms of the data. So the data, the end date being the notification date, so if you were to remove that, end date and allow any data right up until you know, you lodged your application. So if your water permit expired in, say, I don't know, 2024, allowing that those extra 4 years worth of data to be used. So related to how many permits that might possibly apply to.
Right, okay. The paragraph 30, and this is the two lines above the first bullet point, has the phrase expiring post-notification. What are you getting at there? What is water permits expiring post-notification? What's the post-notification referring to?
Sally Dicey, water, post-notification of Plan Change 7. So again, those water permits, again, that was referring back to that, the use of the notification date as the end date for the data that would be utilised in the schedule through the controlled activity pathway.
And that's possibly where I'm getting quite confused in terms of what's now being proposed for even the controlled activity route. When I read that, I thought what's proposed to quantify historical use is under the controlled activity route is whatever's in the schedule. But your answer seems to suggest what's proposed is equivalent guidelines, minimum flow or flow sharing conditions, or efficient irrigation systems. So I was really quite confused as to where you're going with this. Not you personally, but where everybody was going with this.
I'm sorry, could you clarify that for me?
I don't understand. I do understand the issue is one of manipulating manipulating the taken use of water to increase what otherwise would have been historical use of water. So I understand what that issue is. I don't understand the answer in paragraph 30 and 31. In particular, I don't understand whether or not what's been contemplated here is that in an application under the controlled activity pathway, you would be using aquilink guidelines, minimum flows or flow sharing conditions, or typically utilise efficient irrigation spray systems. So I don't understand what you are saying. Not you personally, though. It's everybody.
Sure, I'm with you now. Sorry, I was just catching up with you in terms of your reference to the efficient. You're referring to those bullet points in paragraph 30. So that was, I think, a discussion around the risk of manipulating the maximum or manipulation is possibly not the right word, the potential for securing a greater maximum by using data post-notification date for PC7. So if you apply for your, so if your permit expires in, say, 2024, and this was really talking about the risk that that might introduce if you're utilising data right up until 2024. And so we were thinking about the kinds of permits that would expire post 2021, and those bullet points were talking to how those permits were probably granted in the first place, that those permits being newer permits than deemed permits would have been assessed originally based on the Aqualink guidelines, may have a minimum flow and flow sharing conditions attached to them, and that the activities probably or typically utilise efficient irrigation spray systems. So it was really speaking to the thinking that the deemed permits have far more headroom between historic use and consented limits. And so there's far more potential with a deemed permit to, I'll use the words in the JWS, manipulate the maximums and try and increase your allocation beyond what you'd actually been doing. But with those newer permits, which are more likely to be expiring post-October 2021, that the experts advised that they thought there was a much lower risk.
All right, so I understand that now. Yeah. you're drawing a distinction between the risk for a deem permit, which is greater, and the risk for a permit granted under the RMA, which is lesser, because probably they're doing one of those, taking one of those three actions under those three bullet points.
That's correct. Okay.
Paragraph 40 and I just want to check what's being suggested here. This is dealing with the controlled activity rule and a matter of control, which is the matter A, the first matter. And here you say the matter would allow council to assess historic use and impose consent conditions that reflect the actual rate and volume of water taken as required by the entry conditions. This ensures an application remains limited to the lesser of the limits of historical use or the existing water permit. So it's either A or B. Is that the matter of control? So you do see it's a lesser of one over the other, and that's being brought forward into the plan. Yeah.
Sandra McIntyre, yes, because the matter for control refers to both the limits of historical use, or now we have in accordance with historical use and existing water permits, then it has to meet the limits of both of those.
Mm. But the council could go for the lesser of the two, and that's what's intended?
Yes.
Yep, okay. Before we broke for lunch, I put to you what I understood Dr. Davron's evidence to be in relation to irrigation main lines. That they are laid out both for horticulture and viticulture purposes, but they're also laid out to install centre pivots. And so, as best as I understand, that is the breadth of the factual scenario placed before the court. And with that in mind, have the planners turned their mind to other controls or matters of discretion which may be required if centre pivots are laid out? And with it, increased intensification of the use of land.
Dr. Pulsmarkers, if that were the case, then probably it would be worthwhile considering putting an additional matter of discretion in the rule to address potential effects. And that is currently not the case. The only additional matter that we propose under the JWS is relating to the area of irrigation only. The difficulty with that is that there is limited guidance in the plan, as well as in Plan Change 7, around what are acceptable effects in terms of water quality or on water quality.
Now, does everyone agree in principle with Mr. De Pulsmaker?
Sandra McIntyre, yes, essentially I agree. I agree with that. I think it would be desirable to include a consideration of the effects of water quality, but I agree with Mr. De Pulsmaker that the structure and content of the regional water plan makes it difficult to look at how that would work in the context of that plan.
Well, with that in mind, is the inference to be taken? Oh, sorry, someone else wants to say no. You do. Sorry.
Sure, Sally Dicey. I wonder, and again, just thinking of this, you know, on as we go, Mr. Davron had mentioned the link to centre pivots, but I hadn't been aware of a specific concern, which completely makes sense in terms of water quality effects related to that had been raised. And I wonder if there's potential that that's dealt with effectively, at least for dairy operations, through the application of the national environmental standards, regulations, standards, in terms of requiring a consent for expansion of area irrigated on dairy farms. And so that would only leave centre pivots for a sheep and beef operation.
Potentially, though, with an increase in intensity of those activities.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. And so then how would you deal with that? Or is your assumption that there is no increase in...
No, that's not my assumption. No. So, yeah, that would be a gap.
Yeah. So potentially dairy picked up on the NES. Mm. But there's a gap currently in terms of what your outcome might be for contaminants.
Mm. Mm. Yes.
Under centre pivots. Everyone happy with that? No one's disagreeing. Okay.
Sorry, Tom de Pulsmacher. Under the RMA, you could consider, you know, I think it's Section 70 effects, but beyond that, like those beyond the gross effects, it would be very hard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The fact that no one has turned their minds to any environmental effect as might arise with the increase in irrigation area for viticulture, is it your understanding that there are no environmental effects from the increase in area for those activities?
Sally Dicey, that's not my understanding. Again, I think this comes back to the specific agreement that we had in considering these questions. So as Ms McIntyre noted earlier, we weren't looking at the... We weren't assessing whether or not we thought it was a good idea to include this relief. It was how could it be incorporated. So apologies if we should have gone further than that.
Well, I mean, we've put up the questions and we've left it wide open for parties to seek clarification or further direction, and you haven't. So what you're saying is that you'd rather not do this on the hoof, you'd rather think about it.
Yep. Sandra McIntyre, yes, I think that's correct. I think there are, when we start to look at the broader implications of further intensification, there's a number of factors that would be worthy of further thought, and part of that would, I think, involve looking at what are the matters, you know, as I said before, that at the moment the regional water plan doesn't, well, it essentially doesn't connect water quality and water quantity. Mm. There are a number of changes that are proposed through Plan Change 8, and certainly in looking at this matter, I'd like to have a look at, think about what the implications of Plan Change 8 might be in terms of this.
Well, all I can say for my part is that we signalled the RDA because there were concerns as to potential water quality issues which needed to be addressed, and we had signalled that several times now, didn't we, Mr. Moore, in court?
They were certainly mentioned on... My recollection is precisely how clearly they were mentioned.
Well, I felt that I was clear, and I think... it doesn't matter. All right. Looking at, going back to the second page, the court asked you a question about whether any of the following purposes for the plan change set out in Mr. De Palsmaker's evidence should be brought, the objective could be strengthened by reference to those. And if you look at paragraph number 15, as set out in your joint witness statement, You got that?
Yes.
Yep. I would say that that is a statement which is a statement as to outcome, and the outcome being an efficient and timely transition. And I think you'd agree with that because you picked it up in the objective, correct? If you look at paragraph number 16, I would say that that is not an outcome, but it's a how-to statement. Therefore, it's a statement of policy, and you haven't picked that up. Subparagraph 2 is again another how-to statement, a matter for policy. Everyone agree with that? No one's disagreeing. Paragraph number 17, first paragraph 1, subparagraph 1, again is a how-to statement, and it's a matter for policy. It's been picked up by the policy. Everyone agree? Same with paragraph 17, subparagraph 2, dealing now with minimum flows, residual flows, etc. That's a how-to, and it's been picked up by policy. Subparagraph number 3, I would say, is not a how-to, it's an outcome. And if that's correct, why hasn't it been picked up?
Tom de Palsmacher, Your Honour. The outcome that is stated in paragraph 3 is indirectly picked up by policy 10A21 and the specifics of that. It's basically the constraints on water taking and the constraints on the size of the irrigated area. We had some discussion around taking it any further, but then the issue that you run into again is what other environmental effects are you going to address, and or activities with environmental effects are you going to address, and does there need to be like a benchmark or like a line in the sand stated in the plan? So it brings us, yeah, I think there's a risk that we end up again stating environmental outcomes in what is essentially a process-based plan change.
Anyone got a different view? Ms. Dicey, do you have a different view?
Sally Dicey, I agree with Mr. de Palsmacher. I also was concerned about whether we can actually be sure that simply rolling over will actually manage the risk of further environmental degradation, allowing a situation to continue for another 6+ years with no environmental assessments at all may actually allow a trend of environmental degradation to continue. So I guess I had real concerns around including that in the objective of a rollover plan change, which doesn't actually substantively assess applications or address environmental effects. So I had concerns around including that in the objective from that perspective.
Could you help me out here in clarifying whether it is your view this is a process-focused plan or it is process-focused plus, and I think you were after a discretionary policy. So can you tell us where you've got to with that so I understand whether you're in the tent or out of the tent in terms of the process focus?
So definitely in terms of the controlled activity pathway, process-focused. And if the bulk of applications are going to proceed under the controlled activity pathway, then, a huge number of activities won't be assessed in terms of whether environmental degradation, the risk around that is actually being managed at all over the next 6 years. Mm.
So is it also process focused for the RDA pathway?
Yes. That's, yep.
Okay. And is it your, does it remain your view that there should be a pathway for, on a discretionary pathway to allow long-term consents?
So that was either a discretionary or also I'd acknowledge that it could be a non-complying. And so, yes, I do still have concerns that, particularly with the non-complying activity rule as it's currently drafted, there is no kind of, there's no clarity around when that might be acceptable or not acceptable and how to assess that. And that's really my suggestions with that discretionary activity or, you know, happily if it's non-complying as well. Policy and rule was aimed at trying to address that gap and really just trying to think about, you know, what kind of considerations should come to bear on any application progressing under that alternative or seeking a longer term consent.
Okay, so with turning now, I'm going to come back to that, but turning now to the policies themselves, policy 10A.2. And you've touched upon this in part. No, actually, sorry, I just need to backtrack a bit. There's been a lot of discussion around that objective and around the word sufficient and timely, and there's been some discussion around the word transition. And I think, Mr. De Palsmaker, your evidence was that the efficient and timely pertained to the transition. And that would be how I would interpret that phrase as well. Is that your evidence? Or
correct,
not?
Your Honour.
Correct.
Yes.
So it's an efficient and timely transition. And a transition, because I looked up all of the words in the dictionary, in several dictionaries, a transition in one dictionary was from something to something, from something to something. And I wondered whether your objective would be made clearer if you actually said what it was from, because we seem to have a statement about where it's going to. And before I suggest words to you for consideration, am I right, in relation to the land and water plan, how many regional plans will that replace? Is it just the current water plan, or is it going to replace more than one plan?
In terms of existing plans,
yeah.
It will replace two plans.
Two plans.
So it will replace the current water plan as well as the waste plan.
Okay.
At the moment, we do not have a land plan.
No land plan to replace.
No land plan.
All right. So would that would it be clearer when we're thinking about efficient and timely transition to include reference to your current regional planning framework or plan framework, and that would pick up your two plans that you're going to replace? So provide for an efficient and timely transition from the current regional planning framework to, and here I've just, and what I was looking at, I was just looking at the words in the first version, to the long-term sustainable management of freshwater in Otago region under a new land and water plan by establishing an interim planning framework. So you've got the clear from and to. Is that clearer?
That is clear, Your Honour. Yeah.
Is it clearer, though, than what either A or B? Otherwise, I won't monkey around with words if it doesn't help.
No. If I recall well, you said from the existing regional planning framework, which is broader than the water plan, which is also including the current RPS, which and there has been some debate about, you know, how useful that is. So my initial thoughts that it would probably be a useful addition.
Sandra McIntyre, just the other thing that I think it is also a transition from is part of the current framework is that we have deemed permits that haven't actually being looked at under the RMA or the the land and water plan at the moment, so it has to somehow encapsulate that as well.
And I do think that's a good idea, that the objective, and that's part and parcel of probably the priorities question. If there's going to be a solution to the question of deemed permits and rights of priorities, that there should be a signal there that we are now moving from an archaic system developed in the 18th century to something in the 21st century. So that there needs to be a policy, a signal there in terms of outcome. Yeah.
Sally Dicey, I'd agree with Ms. McIntyre. The thought struck me as well that the from is actually almost the deemed permit, well, a large part of the issue is the deemed permit regime, and so the from is almost from the current consented framework, and so some of those have yet not even come into play under the existing regional plan water at all. So it's potentially more from the current consented framework to the new planning framework for Otago.
Yeah, not sure about that. Because one of the tasks that we left you yesterday to do was to think about what is the RM issue that needs to be picked up in this plan in relation to deemed permits. And, you know, I think there is an RM issue. I think the issue, I think for the purposes that those deemed permits, originally mining privileges, were created under a Mining Act, you know, 100 or 100 plus years ago, those purposes are not the same purposes that you might recognise them now in terms of the transition. There are RM purposes about to do with flow sharing arrangements or maintaining the integrity of land farming systems that are predicated on flow sharing arrangements, but there are purposes that could be more clearly signalled than lost in the words of a consenting regime or a regional plan framework. I think the regional plan framework pertains to part of the objective, but there's another part of the objective that needs to be brought forward if there's to be a solution, a comprehensive solution to the problem with priorities. That's about as far as my thinking's gone. So I wouldn't wrap everything, fold everything under, you know, one phrase. And which is to say, if there's scope, I wouldn't be bothered about actually having a second objective or a second part to this objective that actually clearly spells out what's going on here. So my suggestion for, from something to something was really only talking about those matters specifically addressing subparagraphs A, B and C, but with a view to there needing to be something more that deals with the move from a deemed permit to an RMA permitting situation. If you clarify that you are moving from the current regional plan framework to something, your long-term sustainable management of freshwater, does that more clearly underline why a six-year period or why the interim planning period, the rationale?
Sandra McIntyre, it's essentially in looking at that question that I had problems with just referring to the long-term sustainable management because I don't think that does clearly focus on that, and that's why I preferred the version which actually refers to the new framework that we're actually intending to be transitioning to.
This is the land and water plan, which is giving effect to the NPS. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so you still like those words?
I don't think they are perfect words, but I think they're better than the words in version one, and I have struggled to think of a way to make it clear that that's what we're wanting to do without referring to
that.
The NPS and the new planning framework. Yes.
Mr. De Palsmaker.
Your Honour, I agree with Ms. McIntyre. I also agree that there might be an opportunity to polish and reword certain things. But also, it just occurred to me as well, like the last sentence picks up on, or to a degree, picks up on what I stated in my evidence, paragraph 17, subparagraph 3. You know, you want existing activities to continue, but in them continuing, they should not be compromising the ability to meet the outcomes that are going to be stated in the new plan through, you know, worsening environmental effects. And I think that is something that is relevant for non-complying activities.
Well, here's my difficulty with the reference to single NPS. The difficulty is this. We have, or will have, I put to you, three NPSs in play when you come to the Land and Water Management Plan. You'll have the renewables and urban development and fresh water. That's what your plan is working on. Do you all agree?
Yes.
Yep. So your conceptualisation of fresh water is under three NPSs. And part of the frustration in this case is having different sectors go ahead of each other or give greater weight to each other under the NPSs, when actually all three have to be brought into account and a land and water plan delivered. So that's my specific problem. Can you respond? You're nodding away. Can you respond to that? That's a difficult one.
Yes, I understand that, Sandra McIntyre. I don't see the NPS renewables and the NPS urban development as being in conflict with the freshwater NPS. However, having said that, I acknowledge that if we are referring to one of the relevant NPSs in here, it would make sense to refer to all of them, because if you don't, then it raises the question about whether you are just dealing with one and not the others.
What about that may come later. Like biodiversity is constantly mentioned, so isn't there a real risk in focusing in on documents in such a precise way and limited way?
Again, Sandra McIntyre, I think, I mean, the genesis of this plan change, the reason we're all here is because it was identified that the regional water plan didn't give effect to the NPS. So that's where we've come from, and that's why the focus has very much been on that. Again, I mean, and in terms of those current NPSs and also what I've seen of the draft biodiversity NPS, I think it seems to me that if we're to give effect to the freshwater NPS, it's not actually going to cut across the ability to give effect to those other NPSs. However, there is a real question there as to how much do you refer to and how much don't you. For simplicity's sake, I think there is some benefit in just focusing on what is the key concern here, which is about the management of fresh water. But I do acknowledge that's, you know, coming from my particular perspective, because that's my focus.
Okay, here's another suggestion. Lawyers are going to say, well, you're going to have a look at those NPSs anyway, so why do you need to write it? But, you know, Ms. McIntyre, you've given, and Mr. De Palsmaker, Mr. Powell, have given reasons why you need to signal the NPS. But I'm wondering whether you have a greater opportunity to actually signal what the shift in ORC thinking around planning, that there is now also a paradigm shift in thinking taking place within ORC, such that it's no longer siloing. I hate to call water a resource because I think that's the wrong language, but it's no longer siloing physical or natural resources, but is doing something different insofar as it's trying to integrate the management of natural and physical resources in a way which is consistent with those higher order documents. Now, you couldn't write any of that in an objective, but could you signal what you're striving for better than simply citing a document?
Sandra McIntyre again, sorry, I seem to be taking all the conversation. I think there would be some benefit in that, and I wonder if the way to approach that in terms of the sort of wording you might use might be to use some wording around integrated management, holistic management, ki uta ki tai, those sorts of words that reflect what that approach is. This is my starting point.
Mr. De Pelsmaker.
I agree. I'm a slow thinker, Your Honour. I agree with the intent. And I think actually through this plan change, we are trying to address an issue that was raised through the Skelton report, which is our current planning framework doesn't give effect in terms of management of fresh water. But I think through this hearing process as well, we picked up that the current operative planning framework is not compliant with the NPS reg as well. So I think it is appropriate to widen the objective in that sense and to make reference either directly or indirectly to other relevant higher order planning documents. I'm not sure if it's going to provide for the relief that other parties are seeking, but it does create a clear signal towards what the new land and water plan is trying to achieve in a more integrated fashion.
Hmm. Anybody else got anything to add there?
Sally Dicey, I think I'm still... I agree with the concerns raised about the multiple national policy statements and any others that might come in. And I wonder if we want to add a from and a to, whether the to would be helped with including the words that were struck through, that until a new land and water regional plan is made operative, with the thought that the land and water regional plan will be giving effect to an RPS which gives effect to all of those higher order documents.
Well, maybe you don't need to say anything. Maybe if you have a from and a to in version A, the rest of it speaks for itself, particularly if there's no reference to just one of those three NPSs which are coming to the fore.
And I suppose as well, Sally Dicey again, the two in version A, the two is the long-term sustainable management of freshwater in Otago. Mm.
Your Honour, Ms. Ben Farrell, unfortunately, I wasn't part of that JWS, and I tried to come in and agree with what the other planners had agreed was workable, and I did that. The option that I put up and recommended in my supplementary evidence, which has a statement such as protect the health and well-being of water bodies from further adverse effects from water abstraction activities until a new land and water regional plan is made operative. That provides an environmental outcome that I had put forward on the basis that it only relates to the environment down the longer term, that it still allows existing activities to occur and be consented without giving consideration to the environmental impact.
So I'm just getting into your evidence now.
So it's supplementary evidence dated 23rd of March.
23rd, not 18th of May. 23rd of March.
And so just to clarify, I agree with what Mr. Palsmaker said earlier, that the version B wording indirectly addresses environmental outcomes. Before that, I had been quite more directive about that. So I guess it's an option of not referring to any of the national policy statements.
Yeah.
And to provide an option that puts up an environmental outcome.
And instead provide an option which has an environmental outcome. Yeah. And that's in part what I'm trying to tease out by referring parties, witnesses, through to paragraph 17, subparagraph 3 of Mr. Palsmaker's evidence, because that is a statement as to outcome. The difficulty that I had with, as it's written, is with the idea of further environmental degradation from the, because I think Ms. Dice is correct, I think over the next 6 years there will be further environmental degradation if these consents are rolled over. But that is what some parties asked the court to accept, but the regional council in particular asks the court to accept. That has to be weighed up against other outcomes. And so that's why I didn't like your objective that has further adverse effects from water abstraction, because yeah, that's going to happen. That's going to happen under the control of an RD rule. And had wondered whether the better conceptualisation of that was to look at cumulative, although that, or additive effects from expansion of irrigation area or increase in water taking, because those two that policies seem to be working on. So a new objective that talks about reducing the risk of a cumulative or additive environmental degradation arising from the expansion of the land area and increase in historical use of water. And because it's referred to everywhere, including by the farmers, about reducing the potential for increased economic hardship, because that seems to me to be the risk for allowing long-term consents, which are subsequently reviewed. Ms. Dicey, you're nodding.
Sorry, Your Honour, I'm following on with what you're
following.
Saying.
I thought you were in total agreement. Okay, so that's a nodding. You're following. So, first, Mr. Farrell, when you look at the word further, it just doesn't, it won't wash, will it? Further adverse effects. There's going to be further adverse effects, even if the court went with everything that Fish and Game are proposing, there will be further adverse effects. It's inevitable because no one's been asked to work on those problems under this plan change.
Yes, Mr. Farrell, yes. Mm-hmm. And I can also clarify that the term further, the wording suggested of cumulative or additional, or that wording you said, would be kept as a fine replacement to further. Like, there was no magic in the term further, so expressing it such as cumulative or as you did, it would be consistent, I think, with what the intention of what I was trying to say.
Well, I think I'm just trying to pick up on what's actually been said in Mr. De Pulsmaker's evidence, that you are talking about cumulative environmental degradation, not from the rollover, but from the expansion of land under irrigation and increase in historical volume of water taken.
Sally Dicey, I think potentially in terms of the managing the increase in the area or increase in, say, the take, to my mind, in the objective that was attempted to be covered off by the reference to enabling existing activities, so limiting it to the kind of the existing envelope, scale, nature, and so, yeah, the objective is potentially covering it off through those wording, through those words. I do accept, however, that that's rather an oblique reference.
And that's part of the problem, and it's visited in many places, is the obliqueness of
yes, I agree entirely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so you just don't want to make language working so hard when something could be just
say it,
bring it out into the light.
Yeah.
You know, and into the light comes, I think, what you've said, which is that, at least under the control and RD rules, you're not working on environmental degradation, as I understand it. That's fair, Mr. De Pulsmaker?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I mean, the intent is to reduce the risk.
Mm.
And I've been very explicit about that in my evidence in chief. I've always been reluctant to bring that or to articulate that intent into an objective, because you're not quite sure under the controlled activity rule whether your objective is actually being met, or that part of the objective is being met. I'm not a scientist, or I'm perhaps not qualified to make those statements, but there is a chance that there are some delay effects as well from established activities that will become apparent during the interim period.
I should have thought almost certainly that they will become, or they may become manifest over the next 6 years or over the next 60 years, because that's a function of time and space, and a whole heap of other interactions which are beyond the control of the regional council, such as climate change.
So in short, I think if we want to prevent that risk, it is better to address it within the objective by referring to the activities rather than to the effects, which I think it does to some degree already.
All right. So when I was thinking about your potential wording, it was the activities would be the expansion of land under irrigation and increase in historical volume of water taken. And I was focusing on that because I know somebody said, oh, well, that's indirectly referred to, but it seemed to me to be very oblique. When I was looking at the policies. So if I went into policy, good grief. Here it is. 2.1, first policy. So I was looking at that policy and I asked myself, the first question, and this is also a function of how the objective is written, is the relationship between the existing areas under irrigation, or what is the relationship between the existing areas of under irrigation and the transition, and the transition spoken of in the objective, which is a transition to long-term sustainable management. So we've got a policy here which is don't increase the area under irrigation. That policy is meant to give effect to the objective, don't increase the areas under irrigation. But look, the objective's just dealing with a transition from something to something. And so that seemed to me to be that it was without a parent objective.
Perhaps you could also say that about the policy 10A.2 that refers to there being no increase in the historical instantaneous rate of abstraction and the volume
you could
of water taken.
To Sally Dicey, I think the only words on the objective that those can hang off is that enabling existing activities. I'm not saying that they're sufficient, but I think that's the only kind of introduction for those aspects of the policy, and the objective.
You see, I had and I think you're right, that's the only thing that could hang it off, but again, it's really oblique, because actually the objective's dealing with a transition from something to something. Mm. And that particular phrase, including by enabling existing activities to be maintained for the interim period, I thought was redundant in its entirety. Now, I'll tell you why. Existing activities are those activities in B and C, is that correct? So they're your existing activities. Okay, so if you put your hand over subclauses A, B and C, how it presently reads this objective is, moving to the second to last line, by establishing an interim planning framework to manage by enabling existing activities to be maintained for the interim period. It's just, it's real gobbledy. Oh, sorry, but it's a bit...
No offence taken.
That's actually not a technical term either, gobbledygook. But, but it's like, it's actually repetitive. And we know what the existing activities are because we're told.
It is ugly, Sally Dicey. It is ugly drafting.
It's ugly drafting. Okay.
But I do think the way it's written isn't pretty. But the enabling existing activities, I do think they do set up, and as I said, they're the only thing that sets up the kind of the hold the line on the area and the allocation, but also the not stranding of assets and enabling people to carry on doing what they're doing. I think that picks up on a line of questioning from Mr. Page earlier. So there's an awful lot riding on those three words.
Understood, but you don't think that that's captured sufficiently by managing water permits for take and use, managing the replacement of deemed permits, managing the replacement of water permits? You don't think it's... I mean, that's there, your existing activities, plus your new ones.
Yep. May I make a suggestion? This is thinking on the hoof here. I'm trying to pick up on a number of the things that you've been saying. I wonder if some of this might get untangled if we were to look at two objectives. So the first one being to provide for the transition from and to, and that to maybe rather than referring to the land and water plan, something about a planning framework that provides for integrated management of land and water that protects the well-being, health and well-being of water bodies, something like that. And then the second one being in the interim period to enable existing activities and not talk about those, what that actually is, replacement of deemed permits and so on, because that is something that could then go down into the policies in terms of the how you are enabling existing activities. So you could then, in that second objective, have in the interim period enable the existing activities and then also refer to avoiding the adverse effects of increased intensification or increasing reliance on uncertain water available or something like, you know, you could actually address that question, that what is the underlying issue that we're trying to deal with by not increasing the irrigation area in that, and then that flows much better down into the things that we're providing for in that first policy.
Okay, so the objective is at least in, has two parts, I think is what you're saying, and there could be a third. So the first part is about that efficient and timely transition from something to something. The second part is in the interim period enabling those existing activities, which seem to be described in B and C, but also new takes, because that is what it's doing. Mm. And then the third part might be some of the ideas picked up in paragraph 17.3, which is dealing with environmental degradation arising from a couple of sources at least, and I suggest also the potential for economic hardship, seeing as that is clearly front and centre of this policy signalling.
Senator McIntyre, yes, I think so, although I wonder if the economic hardship issue comes into the part that deals with the enabling the existing activities.
Could be, yeah. Mm. Yes, because it's existing activities. Mm. Yeah, okay. And if you were looking at it that way, you know, being a bit more explicit about your outcomes, where we're going here, could that then start to work on uncertainties, if there are uncertainties, and I'm not sure about that, but in relation to non-complying activities, there's a clearer foundation when something then comes along and puts up their hand for an 8-year permit or whatever it is.
Yes, I think it would be much clearer.
Mm. Right. Okay. Anybody else? Any other takers for much clearer?
Sally Dicey, I definitely think it will be an improvement.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Tubb, the polls maker, who doesn't like drafting on the hoof? Nobody does, so you don't have to.
Good company.
I agree. I like the idea of having two policies. It needs to be clear.
Two objectives?
Oh, sorry, two objectives. Okay. One of the things that we're currently struggling with in the plan is what if these are not or contradictory. So I think that's something that we need to think about, like if there is a conflict between them does there need to be some kind of a priority or...
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, because it's often the case that you get conflicting policies or conflicting objectives, but ideally the case that some words might weight that.
Yeah.
But part of the problem is actually being honest, I think, with what's actually happening here. Yeah. There's a lack of honesty. Well, lack of honesty. I'm not saying that people are dishonest, but there's a lack of clarity. Yeah. Mm. And people are nodding to that.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit reluctant to make
a commitment.
to make a direct reference to concepts such as environmental degradation. Mm. I had thought, and I'm not sure if this is a viable option, but if you link, I think it's good to have an objective that says you enable existing activities to continue, and then refer to avoiding any increase in the intensity or the scale of them as well as an alternative way of trying to achieve that.
I understand exactly what your concerns are about the environmental issue. Hmm.
Sally Dicey, I'd agree with that comment from my colleague. I'd also have a nervousness about including something around economic hardship in the objective, considering the evidence we've had from the farming community about the economic hardship that this plan change in and of itself
poses for them.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's one of the outcomes for the plan, is not to have people commit to infrastructure, irrigation infrastructure upgrade, then to find in 6 years' time there's a different flow regime or whatever it might be, could it just, you know, and then require different storage or then require whatever it might require. Mm. Mm. Mr. Farrell? Nothing to add? Okay. All right. So in terms of the scope, is this, there may be scope in and of itself, even for the objective as you have it, just to tease it out and separate it. But is there scope looking for to properly parent those objectives about, you know, I've forgotten how to put it, the intensification of activities? Possibly that's you, Mr. Farrell.
Ben Farrell. Mm. From memory, I'm aware the Fish and Game submission sought a clearer outcome in the objective. Mm. And certainly my evidence has attempted to go down that route. So, Council, Fish and Game's not here, but I recall that being an intent of the relief.
And that might have been the case, I think, with Doc as well, with focusing on outcomes.
I understand that Doc's also has quite a lot of scope in terms of that.
All right. Oh, yeah, look, just one other matter, and hopefully it's a drafting issue, so that it's in part a drafting issue and in part a problem, potential problem, and you've already been taken to it by council, but it's under the RDA rule and your new subparagraph 5, which is a matter of discretion. And it's the phrase, as agreed with council, as agreed with council. What if council doesn't agree? You've got a problem with your application, haven't you? Council doesn't agree. What are you going to do? You're going to be non-compliant? That doesn't make sense. Should you strike out the words? Because if council doesn't agree, you ought to have the courage of your own convictions to put in the application anyway and just run it and see what the outcome is. It may be decline, or it may be that you've persuaded the council to turn its mind. So that was my comment about the drafting. I think the words don't make sense from that perspective, and you all agree?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, good. Yes. All right. And then the minor, very minor drafting thing was just the order of words in subparagraph 2, Roman numerals 2. And what is it? You've got rate and volume, but the equivalent controlled activity has volume and rate. It's absolutely nothing. But should you be following the same order of words as in the equivalent controlled activity rule?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's good. All right, so those are my questions. Have you got any questions?
I do have a couple. I just wanted to take you to this definition that you've suggested in paragraph 60, this definition of mainline irrigation pipes. So I've looked at your 64, and that's the new entry condition, and that refers to any additional area to be irrigated, provided all necessary mainline irrigation pipes serving that area have been installed before 18 March 2020. So I was just trying to line that up against the definition, and also that concept of serving that area. So in terms of your definition, you talk about primary permanently installed pipelines delivering water to the irrigated area. Now, is that the same proposition as serving that area?
Sally Dicey, I think the serving that area referred to the start of that Roman numeral 2, and I'm looking at the one at paragraph 64, so serving that additional area. So that's an internal reference. But I agree with your comment. I think there is, it looks a bit overlapping.
Well, I'm just wondering about the precision of it. Mm. And a consents officer looking at whether you get in through the door, and whether there might be an internal conflict between the definition of mainline irrigation pipes and that entry condition itself.
So, Sally Dicey, sorry. I wonder if the definition could be tidied simply by changing delivering water to that irrigated area to delivering water to an irrigated area, because that's a definition of what a mainline irrigation pipe is. And so it's a pipe that delivers water to an irrigation area. And then in the rule, we're talking about a specific area, which is an additional area.
So what is an irrigation area in that concept?
So it's an area.
So the proximity between the delivery of the water in the irrigated area. Perhaps I could ask an intervening question. So you've got you've got your mainline pipes, and then you've got some sort of step downs that go off that. So I'm just trying to understand how.
Sure. So
that notion of delivering water to the irrigated area.
I would imagine, and I might refer this to our technical experts because they're sitting along the table, and I'm sure they want to speak up at some point during the day.
I'm not limiting anybody contributing. I'm just having a little bit of a problem understanding what it all means and how it would apply out in the field.
So, Sally Dicey, again, I imagine that a mainline irrigation pipe would have a capacity issue or an area limitation based on the size of the pipe, and then a maximum kind of irrigation area that pipe could potentially cover. But I will refer that down the line to the technical experts and see if they've got a comment on that.
And if I just, Sandra McIntyre, if I just add, we were quite reliant on Mr. Davroff for advice as to this definition and the wording of this, and I'm not sure how much we can cover in his absence.
So any of the technical people?
Simon Wilson. So I wasn't involved in the creation of that definition, but I read that as the delivery of water to, if we call the area a paddock, the delivery of water to the paddock to enable the step down to the actual irrigation system. So you haven't installed your pivot, but you have got the pipes running that will take the water that far. I don't know if Dr. Bright wants to add anything.
Christina Bright speaking. I can just add that Miss Dicey essentially captured that pipe that is serving an irrigation area will be sized to the area that is essentially delivering water to that area, and then the subsequent connection point, whether that be a pivot and or another spray form type of irrigation, it might not just be a pivot. Then if I cast my mind back to the way that it's worded, in terms of the use of the word serving, it is essentially the pipe that's sized for delivery that is serving that new, sorry, not new area, but the area that is to be irrigated in future as a part of that already planned infrastructure.
So, just coming back to the planners then, does it that assist in terms of a clear redrafting? Or is that too hard to do on the hoof? Because I think you have to look at...
Oh, I'm very sorry, but Sally Dicey, that seems to be quite clear to me, but if you've still got a residual concern, then we'll potentially need to think about that some more. I don't know if anyone else has got something else to add.
Okay, well, I might need to think about that some more too, in the light of what you've all said and what I've observed. So I'm just now going to the second part of the definition, where there's a suggestion of, in the definition, it's to be supported by an irrigation design plan. I just wondered if it ought to involve a little more than that, in that the rider is that those necessary mainline irrigation pipes serving that area have been installed before a specific date. So I was just wondering whether that notion of supported by an irrigation design plan was sufficient to encompass all the elements of this entry condition and the matters that are going to inform the new, considering the new matter of discretion, that was all.
Sandra McIntyre, I think the qualifier in terms of when the work had been done is included in the condition, which is at paragraph 64, the restricted discretionary activity condition, and certainly my general preference is that those sorts of things would be included in the rule condition rather than in the definition. The definition establishes what it is you're talking about. The rule then sets the conditions as to, you know, the circumstances in which that definition can be used.
Sure, but I suppose that where I started was, why was there a need to have this shall be supported by an irrigation design plan? Yeah. Because I thought, why just that? Because there's a whole lot more going on in this rule than that. Yeah. So wouldn't this my, just be something you'd have to establish when you put in your application?
I mean, my understanding from Mr. Davron was that the design plan was necessary to actually be able to confirm which were the primary mainline pipes and where they were, so what area they were serving.
Sally Dicey, yeah, I acknowledge your concern, Commissioner. That is a rather odd place to have that. This shall be supported by an irrigation design plan is an odd statement and a definition. And I think that Mr. Devron's thinking was that you would be able to prove, I suppose, that there was an irrigation, mainline irrigation pipe through the design plan. It would be dated, etc. But yes, it is an odd place to have it in the definition, and potentially that should sit in that aspect, should sit in the rule that the installations shall be established through submission of a irrigation design plan or that and some other methods. So I think it was about proof, potentially, and because often they'll be buried.
Yeah. You look like you want to say something.
I do, thanks. Simon Wilson, I wonder if there's a capacity thing being suggested there as well, in that the definition refers to having the pipes in place all the way back up to the headworks, and therefore your irrigation design plan will prove how much water you're expecting to take through from the pipes you laid right at the start.
That sounds like something that could be easily tidied, though.
Mm. Mm.
I'm
I
not saying
so.
Any of this couldn't be easily tidied. I just
go look at it.
When I looked at it, I just had a few concerns.
Sure.
It looked rather odd in several yep. respects. So yep. I guess I'm just indicating that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Otherwise, I'd like to pick
After all, you don't really want people having to dig up.
Oh, but they did, actually.
Well, which they did on our site visit. We've dug down to show you that here's the main line.
I was aghast.
It's like, wow.
Why would you do that? But they did. They had the diggers down there. So I would have accepted what your witness said. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the rest of it's, I don't need to ask anything about the rest of it. The things that I want to ask have all been asked, thank you.
Right. So we're not proposing a method that includes uncovering the pipes?
No, certainly not. They look like they've been down there for a long time.
I just had one question on the schedule, and this relates to the Appendix 10 that the so-called technical experts put together. Have you got that there, Mr. Wilson and so on? On page 9, you've got an example. You've got that one there?
Yes.
And I was, when I looked at this, I was trying to work out how you got from the N number, for N equals 3D plus 18, to the 142. But then this morning you presented a slide. Was that was that for this example? Do you remember the slide with the number of data values required? And you showed us then how you got to the...
I do remember the slide. I can't be certain. I'd have to go back and check.
Right. But
I think it may be, yes.
But this was the method anyway. The slide demonstrated the method to get from the N number to the selected typical maximum. Is that
yes?
Is that the approach?
The N number is the number of similar data values you
yes,
have to have.
Yes. So yes, my question really was, how did you get from say N of 42 to a rate of 142?
Right.
And I think this slide might have clarified it. I just wanted to confirm that was the... Is that the way you get...
Yes, that's the way. So in this sense, the number 142 litres on the list is similar to... I think it was the example. It was about 54 points of data. So when N equals 42, the answer is 142. When N equals 30, the answer is
okay.
142.
So this other slide is the missing link, if you like, to explain to someone like me how you got from...
Yes, yeah, I think the other slide is... the slide was designed to demonstrate what it looks like in practice. Page 9 and the pages following were designed for the other technical experts to be able to exercise their professional judgment in working out whether the numbers we'd come up with
right.
were typical or not.
And everyone's agreed to that approach?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if anyone else has got any comment, but... No? Well, thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Ron.
Anything arising from the court's questions?
Just perhaps clarifying an answer I gave to a question in relation to how
carefully or clearly signalled the contamination risk of expanded irrigation areas was, I may have been thinking far too narrowly in relation to the question, because the issue of those risks associated with irrigation expansion areas was canvassed extensively during particularly the Cromwell weeks. I was thinking more narrowly in terms of the implications on stranded assets when I gave my answer, perhaps coloured what it was.
Kind of surprised that you said that.
Yes, I was sitting there, your surprise, and indicated to me I had probably not quite heard correctly, but it was certainly traversed, and particularly with the planning witness, Ms. Perkins, I think it was, and there was another as well. So
that's all right.
It was through that lens.
The question is, though, well, has anyone got any questions arising from the court's questions? And so then the second question is, what do we do? because, you know, you've got this issue of stranded assets and have we nailed it, you know? And I guess a question of should you even have it, which is, you know, you didn't look at it. So should we have it? And if we should, have you? Where should it be put? Controlled or RDA? And then what are the matters of control or discretion? And then you've got a more broad question about the objective. And I suspect your single objective is working too hard, and that at least needs to be split. And then there's I think probably sensibly need to be honest about what's happening with deemed permits, and there needs to be something fairly explicit. Actually, that'll support your relief you were talking about yesterday coming in as well. So there probably should be something there too. And I think there was a third potential with not talking about environmental degradation generally, but talking about being a bit more specific. Mm. So what do you do? So assuming that there is scope for that, a better guidance as to what's going on and why here.
Mm. Yes, it strikes me that some further conferencing might be required to land this. It strikes me that the planners aren't perhaps too far apart here, and it will certainly make closing submissions more efficient if some further time is invested.
We could probably invest that time, but actually you don't need us. I'll see if Commissioner Dunlop is available, but you don't have to wait for our invitation to mediate or to conference.
I'm Sandra McIntyre. I'm just wondering whether a more efficient way than conferencing might be to have somebody put up their hand to start a draft and then circulate that among the planners and get feedback on it.
Take a volunteer.
some
nice draft.
It depends on the time frame. I'm on leave next week.
Just to add to that, Sally Dicey, we would need quite a clear scope, I think, in terms of what to include or not to include, so I don't want to miss anything off this time.
No, and then we need to hear from Council about that, because we've still got the Territorials case, which is ongoing, and Hydro Reforms, but the Dams case, which is ongoing as well. And that was, I guess, the point of your questions, Ms. Dixon, was about the objective and how it pertains perhaps to those other, to those large scale assets, I think, was where you were going with that.
Yeah, sure.
But your witness, Mr. Enzel, he didn't really address him. He addressed quite comprehensively a non compliant policy or rule, I've forgotten which, or both, but he didn't get into those large scale assets in his evidence.
Mr. Enzel?
Yeah. Or did he? I didn't think he did.
Exactly. I know he did raise questions about how hydro was going to be dealt with, and he was thinking about water for territorial authority use in terms of drinking water and so on. I think the emergence of the issues around infrastructure, the concrete and the dams and the actual building of treatment plants and so on for water supply, I think that's kind of emerged a bit later.
Yeah, and I certainly picked up on new evidence from, I think, Ms. Muir yesterday in answer to questions where it was like, oh, you know, it was again, what's your process as a territorial council? How will this work out for you or not work out for you? And that seemed to be emerging evidence. So how do you want to tackle that? You know, because I don't know whether there's an appetite. Is there an appetite by the regional council? I think there is, to be addressing, and I'm not sure how yet, the hydro question, the big dam question for irrigation, and the TA question.
Yes. And there is, given that the case for hydro, the Trustpower case, has concluded now, we'll at least have an understanding of what it is that is happening in that context. So we're looking at how the Trustpower assets may be accommodated within the framework. In terms of the community water supplies, yet to see how the evidence plays out there. So the council's position at this particular point is one of saying that they stay as all others, 6 years in the framework applies, so no carve out or no exceptions. But I think we just need to see how the rest of the case unfolds in the next day or so. And likewise for the large dams, we have some further evidence, and I'd like to test that to see whether or not a further accommodation needs to be made in that regard. But that's probably all I should say about that. So from a sequencing perspective, given that we should have finished both of those exercises optimistically by tomorrow, if we get through the TA case, hopefully we might get through the dams today. So insofar then as further conferencing, and it can simply be informal conferencing, to try and either land or really narrow the objective that could usefully follow once I think we've heard the remainder of those two cases.
So you're saying hold off until you hear whether that's sensible, and then see if there's anything at an objective level that has to be brought into account?
Yes, and I'm conscious that Mr. Tews has yet to give his further evidence, and my recollection is he's put forward some further thinking in relation to provisions, and it may well be that, that, and I can't recall whether he tinkered with the non-technical term, made a suggestion in relation to the objective.
I just can't recall.
So let's see how that plays out, and then we'll perhaps put forward a suggestion as to next steps to see whether we can land land the objective. And then it is possible that the witnesses then are re-impaneled to speak to that at the beginning of that final week, ahead of closing submissions being given.
Okay. And in terms of conferencing, I understand from Mr. Dunlop and Mr. Wilson, you're probably better able to speak to this, that there was still further conferencing with Commissioner Dunlop, I think last week maybe, in terms of your attachment 10. But
yes,
I think it was just
was,
by way of a Zoom call or a telephone conference, is what he said. He didn't come down for it.
No, we met twice via Zoom. There was a... Our process was to have a document to work from, as opposed to compiling a document collectively, and that worked quite well.
So somebody drafted something and then you were just working on that document?
Yep. Yes.
Well, that seems to be the suggestion. Somebody gets started, but perhaps after tomorrow. But so it doesn't all have to, you don't all have to fly for this. There's been so much work, and it's just building on that work. I really think it is building on that work. But perhaps if somebody started the drafting. Possibly, Mr. McIntyre, you're a good... it's good to ask you, because I know that others are actually involved in the priorities question, and I actually think that that is potentially complex in terms of landing it and successfully landing that. Yeah.
I'm happy to have
On holiday?
On holiday.
Oh, okay, right. Of course you are too. Yeah.
That in terms of whatever the time frames are, as long as it's not a time frame in the middle of next week.
It won't be. Yeah, no, it won't be. No, nothing's going to impinge on your holiday. Yep.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Okay. It's a flexible arrangement, and I don't even know how you got hold of the Commissioner. You probably just rang him up and said, are you available for a Teams conference? And he seemed to be. So that was, you know, so it's informal. He is there.
And there does, my observation is there seems to be a constructive working relationship amongst these experts such that the facilitator is not required to stop them fighting with each other, as might sometimes be the case.
This is true. So. Hate to report, but yes. Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. We'll leave it with leave it to be an exercise to be worked upon, and perhaps council to put their collective heads around when that might come back to us and how it might come back to us. Happy with that, Mr. Page?
I'm in danger of upsetting the apple cart.
Okay.
I'm perfectly happy with it as a process.
Yeah.
What I have some reservations about is whether it is really for the experts to decide what the objective of the plan change is, because they all come from a slightly different point of view about what this is for. And we're in danger of getting a smorgasbord back unless there's some clear direction from somebody who has the mandate to say, what is this plan change for?
Yep, and I hear what you're saying. Probably can't... We know some of the things that it's about.
Yes.
We know that it's about a transition and could be approached better, like we've suggested, so from something to something. We know that it's something about deemed priorities. That's tricky, and you know, there's another process for that, but it probably needs to be an objective there too. We know that it's something to do with existing activities, so that there are some limits around maintaining the existing environment, accepting that, or not accepting, because I think that's your case, that there will be additional degradation there.
Yeah.
So we know it's something about that.
Yes. Mm. Well, and so Your Honour has purposefully brought counsel and the witnesses back to a question repeatedly during the case, and for good reason, asking is this process plus, or is this something else? And that's a matter for the court to decide.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure it's a matter that it's fair to ask the witnesses to address without some direction about that.
And so did you think there was a process plus question there?
Well, there's potentially.
Potentially.
Yes.
Because you might get somebody saying it should be an objective to save the Galaxids, not just to, you know.
Well, I mean.
Because I've seen that somewhere in policy.
For example, I've just been reading during the course of the afternoon the submissions lodged for WISE, who advanced the proposition that a simple process is not within the mandate of the Act because of Section 67.3 and Te Mana O Te Wai. Well, if that's so, then whatever the witnesses think about what the objective of the plan change is neither here nor there.
Yeah, no, that's fair too. So where that goes, though, is that you would get an interim decision that said work on the objectives, whereas I think there's some work to be done on the objective now. I think that you've got a single objective, in a sense, which is working far too hard. It needs to be split.
Yes. But my sense this afternoon is that discussion became much more productive than with respect you gave the witnesses a push about what are we trying to do with this objective here. And it's that degree of focus, I think, that's required in order to get an outcome rather than leave them with the exercise without some direction.
Okay, so what are you suggesting the direction should be? So I'm just stalling.
Well,
be direct, Mr. Page. What do you want?
It seems to me that... well, I think what the witnesses are needing is direction from the court about what is not on the table.
Oh, not on the table. You see, the problem with that is that what's not on the table. The problem with that is that there's quite a bit on the table from people who are not here.
Yes, I understand that. And I understand that you're probably not in the position to be making those kinds of directions at the moment.
Particularly turned my mind to what's actually being sought across all of the parties.
Yeah.
We know what we think we know what's there, but and that's an issue. Like WISE response has an outcome which they are seeking, which is inconsistent with what I think is you're still maintaining a discretionary pathway, 20
yes.
consent, yeah? So that would be inconsistent with yours. And so how could you be drawn on that unless you've done the evaluation?
That
looks like a decision.
It kind of does.
Mm.
But I'm not inviting Your Honour to make interim decisions now because for all the difficulties that would bring for the court, but I'm just signalling that I think in the absence of some direction about what the purpose of the exercise the planners are being tasked with, I'm concerned that in a couple of weeks' time we're still going to be arguing about what the objective's for.
Mm.
And I don't think it's a matter for the planners to decide that.
No, and I agree with you. They're to draft it, but they're not to
yes.
decide it.
Yeah, yeah. So I think...
And do you think there is a problem with the objective generally?
Fundamentally, isn't it?
Fundamentally.
Yes.
And what fundamentally do you think the problem with the objective is?
In its current form, I can't see how it survives Section 67.3 is my fundamental problem with it, but that's... Anyway, that's a...
So, section what?
67.3.
In what way?
Because it doesn't engage with giving effect to the NPS.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But that's a matter of
That's
law,
a matter so. Of submission, yeah. yeah.
But if we're effectively asking them to behave as parliamentary counsel for drafting purposes, but they need a parliamentary counsel are given drafting instructions, and so that's, I think, what we're lacking at
okay.
the present time.
No, that's fair enough. Anyone got any thoughts on that and how to manage that from here? Because it is difficult. Like, there may need to be added instructions over dams and hydro and TA. The case, case is not necessarily finished. So, quite apart from the cases in front of us, but to the extent that I would see a drafting instruction, it is that objective is working too hard and needs to be split into two parts, but that is not to add parts nor take parts, but to just make it clearer. There needs to be something, I think, that we've set you on that track already about priorities. Does there need to be something in addition? I would certainly... the whole focus of my questions today was whether there needed to be something looking at the degradation issue, however you express it.
I just have one thought, and that's the panel haven't been asked to look at certain issues. They were off the table. And it's getting to the point that those matters either are permanently off the table or they are allowed to comment as a panel and express their views, whether they agree that those matters should be addressed in an objective sense or not. And I think that's where some direction may be useful. It's quite difficult, even at the back of the room, not doing a heck of a lot during the day, to read the tea leaves and to give some guidance to my expert team. So I'd just endorse Mr. Page's comments around that respect. And some matters probably they need to turn their mind to, or else it may be too late for them as a grouping to do that.
Then how do you put things on or off the table without making a decision?
I fully acknowledge your concerns around that.
Yeah.
I suppose the court was willing to take matters off the table for the first conferencing round.
Oh, only because it matters for the court to decide.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So these are the big issues, the big relief sought by parties, which has nothing to do with the schedule.
But a nice solution may be in respect of the national, a recognition of the national policy directions. And the discussion earlier with Your Honour and the panel was steering that way and then sidestepped somewhere else. But as to whether those matters come through into the policy... I'm just conscious that if panel members have a view that we're not to talk about certain things based on the previous directions.
We left things off the table because things are just plainly for the court to decide.
Except
and they're
that,
difficult.
Your Honour. Yeah.
Because they are. But in saying that, this objective, even for the stuff that's on the table, the objective doesn't seem to be clear.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And maybe what could be on the table is the national direction, because that quite clearly is a matter that should be addressed in the objective And that doesn't need to get into issues of duration or anything like that, because that's for the court.
But it's whether you just cite an NPS. Why would you need to? Because it's relevant anyway. Do you do something more intelligent in terms of signalling that there is now to be quite a fundamental change in approach by the ORC?
Well, I think both options are available, Your Honour, because at least just citing gives a hook or some life to the potential rules or matters of discretion that kind of just exist there without that follow through to the objective. So I think just citing does provide some usefulness, but I take your point as well.
All right, thank you, Ms. Dixon. Any thoughts?
I think Mr. Welsh's point that it would be useful, I suppose, for the planners to look at this in the round. And in part, the issues we've been talking about today are because they've thought about the objective, but kind of in a vacuum almost. Because they haven't been looking at the whole plan change. But I'm also aware that in a sense, not all the cases have actually been completed yet.
No,
so that's a difficult exercise. In terms of my own kind of personal feeling, I'm more towards truncating the objective rather than kind of expanding it. You know, it's about a transition. The objective just needs to say it's about a transition in relation to these things, in my view. And in some ways, the complications arise when we start adding things back into it. And you know, there is a quite serviceable list of the things that it deals with, you know, the deemed permits, the replacement of water permits, and so on, that sets up the framework for what follows. I think if we start talking about what, apart from transitioning, if we start talking about what else it might achieve, that's the point at which consensus breaks down and at which it gets complicated.
And is that in part a recognition that this particular place that the council finds itself, if not unique in our 30-year planning history, is fairly unusual, and therefore this instrument is also unusual insofar as it's not working across the range of problems that one would normally expect a plan to be working across?
Yes, I think that's right.
And so, as incomplete as it is, there's no reference to the environment.
It is an unusual situation, and it's meant to address a particular issue that's arisen in this region at this time. And it does come back to those discussions we had several weeks ago around whether this is process, process plus, and if it's process plus, plus what. And we were certainly developing a thinking that the more constrained, the more process-focused it is, the easier it will be to actually make the transition to the next stage.
But with that in mind, that might be to take things off the table. Yes.
Yes. Yes, Your Honour.
And I think what Mr. Page is saying, you're taking it off the table or not, you know, he wants, I guess, more honesty in that sense. It's not just working on a transitional plan. If it's just a transitional plan, absent any other narrative around that, that is to take off the table, I would have thought, long-term consents for irrigation, potentially for new consents for hydro and new consents for TA.
I'd need to think about that a bit more, but the fact that it's a transition plan and it's designed to be straightforward doesn't mean to say that we can't provide for the odd exception, which doesn't kind of fit the thinking and the framework. There are always things that don't fit and may need to be accommodated.
That's true too, but I think what we've repeatedly heard is that there's no policy framework for that which doesn't fit within the controlled NADI boxes, which is why policy is being suggested by IRUG and potentially by others as well. Yes. Policy is, but not necessarily objectives.
Yes, yes. I suppose, that going back to my thinking of several weeks ago, in terms of keeping it simple, keeping it kind of streamlined, that the policy basis for any exceptions that might move outside the kind of six-year default thinking would be derived from the NPSs. But that I know thinking like that creates its own issues because there is the question of how the MPSs sit alongside each other in this particular situation. But that is a policy justification
so
for making that decision.
In that case, the policy is the policy to step outside the transitional purpose. No, that wouldn't make sense. I was going to say step outside the transitional framework.
Well, if the if the transitional framework is a default position of a six-year consent to, yes. I am rather thinking on the...
All right.
Thinking aloud rather than...
And that's what makes this really difficult is, you know, the easy bit is to strip back the notified plan, strip it back.
Yes.
And then build it up if you need to. So we've got a strip back plan. The difficult question is, to what extent do you build?
And I understood that was probably what Mr. Page meant, and I may have misunderstood Mr. Page, but when he said it's easier to decide what's off the table than what's on.
But in terms of what is off the table, I'm not sure whether the question's being asked, is it off the table long-term consents for agriculture? Because we haven't sat down and analysed it. And that's the problem. Is it off the table for Wise? Is it off the table for Coes? Is it off the table for Fish and Game? There's all sorts of things coming at us, which seem to be easy just to leave for a decision to go, it's on, it's off, and then send people back if we needed to.
I know, that's the case you've been hearing on Cromwell for the last few weeks.
Yeah. So how do we get to is it off the table now? Because I do also acknowledge what Mr. Page is saying. You don't want planners to provide you an objective which suits them but doesn't necessarily have any mandate.
Which kind of circles back to my thinking that if we keep that objective quite straightforward and focused on the fact that this is a transitional plan, doesn't need to address everything that might be picked up in the framework that follows, but it needs to provide a steer as an objective.
Yeah, and I guess where my hesitation comes is, that being so, if there is something in it for, just say it's TAs, does there also need to be an objective change? If it's strictly transitional and process orientated, how can you have a policy that, even though it's RD, that envisages something else for community water takes without a steer in the objective? Or can you? And I think that's what's not being landed yet.
I think my suspicion you can, actually. The objective doesn't need to cover everything.
No.
It provides the guidance about what the plan change is for. Inevitably at a reasonably high level. Doesn't need to pick up everything that is developed in the policies that follow.
Okay, no, I understand what you're saying. All right. Thank you. Mr. Walsh.
Oh, sorry, at the risk of being demolished, I'm just getting some glares from members of the panel who have last flights out of Dunedin, and I'm wondering if they can be excused.
No, you can be excused, sorry. It's useful that for some of you, not all of you, to listen to the conversation, though, about what's the exercise, but everybody should go and catch their planes.
Thank you, Your Honour.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Sorry about that. All right. What do you want to do?
There's some merit on the planners working on the objective through the lens of the discussions today, and I still see there being some merit in the contribution that they collectively, as independent experts, might make. It doesn't mean to say that what's put forward is the last word on the matter. Parties will still have an opportunity to provide closing submissions. And it may, if the objective is stripped back and rebuilt, as some of the discussions today have teased out, it provides then a framework for either adding more as the court reaches the point of making decisions or removing items if they don't get across the line. But I certainly do see some benefit in doing that. I mean, the alternative, if we say no, that's it, no more, Mr. De Pelsmaker is left with trying to cobble together for his reply, and I actually see collective thinking in this space might be beneficial.
Okay. And do you agree with Ms. Dixon that a strip back objective, which is, you know, really is geared towards process-orientated plan, doesn't preclude policies which go plus TA or plus farming or, you know, plus whatever.
Yes, yeah. I do tend to agree with that.
Okay.
Rather than adding, bolting on to the objective and cluttering it up.
Yep. So, okay. Yes. You happy with that, Mr. Page? As you can be?
I think so. Yes.
All right. Because this is difficult. You know, it's a difficult process just because the process is what it is. So, all right. So we will make that direction, but wait until tomorrow when you hear all of the evidence, hopefully coming through from TAs and TAs and DAMs tomorrow. And the direction at the moment is not to include other activities, so stick with what you've got, looking at perhaps reframing that first objective into two objectives, if that makes sense, to deal with some of the issues that we're dealing with, to make more explicit what it is that we're moving through here, and plus also priorities, but not all of you be working on priorities, you might, but that's potentially, that's significant and I think probably warrants its own add-on. Yep. And leave it at that with no discussion of subparagraph 3, paragraph 17, I think. Degradation and economic hardship. And, yeah, unless you think you're of a view that strongly that that should be signalled, but... Okay. Happy with that? When do they have to get back to us?
I'm going to say in 2 weeks. 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks' time. And Ms. McIntyre to kick off. Then go on holiday and see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. 2 weeks' time.
The only suggestion or matter I just wanted to draw to the court's attention around is, of course, we do have Queen's Birthday on, I think it's Monday the 7th of June, and so we might just want to push it out a day.
Yep. To the Tuesday. All right. And, when you were reporting for the priorities?
That's a question that I don't have the answer to just yet. We were working on a schedule to deal with the process and the report back on that. I am conscious that Mr. De Pelsmaker also has to write his reply and have that circulated, so we just need to sequence things in a logical way.
I would also say if there are changes that you've agreed to, I've noted some of them up, you should make those changes in a JWS. I think, like, for example, you all agreed with a couple of things that I suggested. So that would be good to actually bring those forward as well, so we don't lose track of those. So you're not just working on the objective, but any other amendments or which you've agreed with council need to be made. Right. And none of that precludes a revisit of the objective, in light of anything else that we hear for the balance of the case. Okay. Very good.
Can we confirm that no further words required on the schedule?
Oh, I don't think so. Was it? No, there was just that something that you raised about management plan or the irrigation plan, where that goes.
Well, no, I don't think that wasn't in the schedule.
Oh, it wasn't in the schedule.
That was in the actual provisions
and
the definition. Mm. So.
You do need to be looking at the should question for stranded assets, should and could. Should you do it? Could you do it? I do think you need to come back to us on that. And I mean, I understand the issue with the should you do it if you hold up the Manahere Care irrigation scheme, such that it all becomes an RDA instead of a control. But if they're all going to apply for discretionary or non-compliant activity, you know, what's the risk there? Although that's obviously an outcome for the court as well. Mm. Or is there another workaround? Because, you know, a bit like trespass, if somebody's bothered to come and present a case, why wouldn't we look to see what relief we can provide them, even on a specific basis? Why not? They've presented their case.
Sally Dicey, should I answer that question for the Manu Hira Care? They've currently got their application on hold.
Mm.
I'm not sure if the non-complying activity rule, if drafted, would allow many of the applicants.
Mm.
I don't think they would select that pathway.
Mm. Mm.
So it would potentially become a question of controlled or RDA.
Mm. Unless the court goes down your D route. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I'm still asking you, could you, should you, is there scope to do something for a party that had bothered to bring a case? Bearing in mind that, in fact, more people than just MacArthur's caught out here. Mm. All right, so I'll leave that all with you. Come back in 2 weeks' time. Thank you. You'll let us know about priority. Thank you. And that's probably, is that enough for today? Or do we get on with some TAs?
We have Mr. Sheehan and Mr. Curran, and Mr. Page may enlighten us on...
Mm-hmm.
Yes, well, Mr. Sheehan has hospital appointments to do delivery for tomorrow, so I'd like to get him through, and I think my friend said he had one question for him, so I think Mr. Curran might be a bit hopeful to get through tonight. Yes, so that's... Can we do that and take Mr. Sheehan?
And actually, with both these overviews, we're just going to add them to the JWS on the website. We'll just the overviews presented. That seems the best place to put them.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Snelder's here today as well, and we may sneak him through as well, but we'll see how we get on with Mr. Sheehan and then progress.
We just need a 5-minute stop, not least because my evidence is in the other room. We're adjourned 5 minutes. All rise.